Welcome to the Gospel for Life podcast. We help churches make disciples. And now, here's your host, Daryl Dash.
Welcome to the Gospel for Life podcast. And today, I want to do something a little bit unusual. I'm going to take you back to 2008, when the emerging church was still a thing. And back then, came across a book called Why We're Not Emergent, and was written by Kevin DeYoung and Ted Kluck. And I had the privilege of interviewing them way back then. And it is nowhere. I don't think it's anywhere on the internet right now. And so what I've done is dug it back up on my computer and edited it a little bit. And I just want to re-release it so that first, it exists on the internet. And second, I think that even though the emerging church is no longer a thing, there's still much to learn from this interview. So here it is from 2008, an interview I did with Kevin DeYoung, 30 years old, and Ted Kluck on their new book back then, Why We're Not Emergent. Hey, welcome to Dash House, and this is my first podcast. I'm Daryl Dash. Today we're going to talk to the authors of Why We're Not Emergent by Two Guys Who Should Be, Kevin DeYoung and Ted Kluck. I had them on the phone, and their book is coming out on April the 1st, 2008. Here, let's give them a call.
Hello.
Hi, Kevin. Daryl calling.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Ted.
Yeah.
Daryl Dash here. How are you?
Hey, Daryl. I'm good. How are you doing?
Not bad at all. I've got Kevin on the line as well.
Great. Hey, Ted.
Hey, Kevin. What's up, man?
You feeling better?
You know, I actually feel pretty cruddy. So, Daryl, if I have to excuse myself to blow my nose here, I hope you'll understand. I've got the winter crud that's going around up here.
Okay. Well, yeah. I appreciate you doing this.
Hey, no problem, man. I appreciate your interest.
I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about who you guys are and what led you to write this book.
I'm actually a member of Kevin's church. Kevin's the pastor at University Reformed Church, and I've been going there for probably 7 or 8 years. 31 years old, sports writer, I guess you could say, by trade. I write for ESPN.com, Sports Spectrum magazine. Got 3 sports books published and on the shelves now. The first one was a collection of interviews with 15 guys that fought Mike Tyson, the boxer. It's called Facing Tyson, 15 Fighters, 15 Stories. And then this fall, I had 2 football books published. So that's kind of my background. I'd never, I guess, envisioned myself writing a Christian book. You know, that was kind of the furthest thing from my mind. But, you know, I think when this emergent thing kind of started to gather steam, I guess some red flags went up. And, you know, not being a theologian, not being someone who was really well-versed or trained in theology, still there were things that just didn't sound right to me, things that didn't jive with what I've been taught about the gospel my whole life and with what I was learning from Kevin. You know, Kevin's a great Bible expositor, and, you know, I feel like my theological learning really ramped up when he came to our church. And, you know, it was about that time that I started to be challenged with some of these emergent ideas. So I don't remember who approached who, to be honest with you, but we kind of approached each other. We're good friends. And at that time, our friendship was growing. And, you know, we just approached each other and said, hey, do you think it would be fun to do a book like this? And I think the unique angle to us at that time was, you know, it felt like there really hadn't been a whole lot written about the emergent church from the perspective of guys who really fit the demographic, you know, youngish, you know, 30-something type guys who really should have been all over the movement. For you, add to that, Kevin.
Yeah, it's a little bit about myself. I'm 30, so I'm definitely the young guy of the two of us.
Yeah, and, wow. Kevin has more gray hair than I have, though.
Yeah, I do. That's true. That's why I keep it short. Ted's the cool one. And I came to this church in 2004 in the summer. I had been an associate pastor out at a church in Iowa for a couple of years. And coming here, there had been a time of transition. They had a really godly long-term pastor who had been here, and then 2 years without a pastor. And I think during that was just a lot of new ideas, some of which were probably good and some of which were maybe not as helpful. And so I came into a situation where at least some, in some circles of the church, there was a, you know, different emergent books being passed around and different things being dog-eared, and I wasn't really familiar with it, so I tried to get caught up to speed and just found things that concerned me, and then it seemed like once I heard of emergent, everywhere I was looking, I was seeing it. There's more and more church plants in our denomination sort of were looking like that, and different churches that I had friends or family going to would start some new fusion service or something, and at first it just seemed to be just more of a stylistic thing, the three C's, you know, couches, candles, and coffee, which, hey, that's not what I would do, but okay, that's not a really big deal to me in the big scheme of things. But then as I started reading more and, you know, started reading Brian McLaren, and then with Rob Bell, who's just an hour down the road from us at Mars Hill, I had gone to that church, not as a member or a tender, but I visited a number of times. And so I was really curious at the books he was writing and the things he was saying. And so putting that all together, I just started really getting a burden that, well, I gotta write something. I gotta put something down because this is just not right. And we got a lot of college students who, you know, are into Blue Like Jazz, which I know is not exactly Brian McLaren, but it's got some of the same themes, and just got concerned by some of the things that were being said out there and people were buying into. And so Ted and I sat down. My original intent was to write a real boring journal article that would probably die a very obscure death. And Ted said, why don't we write something? So I kind of rode Ted's coattails into the publishing world, and fortunate to have this book coming out.
You know, when I first blogged about the book, the initial reaction I got was not another anti-emergent church book. So I guess people think of Carson's book, and I think John MacArthur's written one recently.
Right.
I think you've already mentioned one difference between your book and the others, but if somebody said to you, why another book about the emerging church, how would you answer that?
Yeah, Ted can chime in too. I think we felt like one, there wasn't anything written by young guys like us, and Ted mentioned that. And then two, you know, I read Carson's book and I liked it. I felt it was helpful. As I talked to some other people that read it, they would get bogged down in the chapter on deconstructionism and Foucault and Derrida and Lyotard and all these people. And it's good for a certain audience, but I don't know if everyone could track with that. And plus, I wanted to do something that was going to cover the waterfront a little bit more. I think the one knock on Carson's book, which I do like, was that it just really dealt with Brian McLaren and then Steve Chalk to a certain extent. So we wanted something that was a little broader and tried to distinguish some of the different players, because, you know, Mark Driscoll is not anything like Brian McLaren. I mean, they're on totally different pages and don't agree on much of anything, it seems to me. So we wanted to try to be true to those distinctions and also write something that was going to be hopefully playful and provocative enough, because that's what I think the emergent crowd is really strong at. I mean, Brian McLaren's fun to read, and he tweaks people all the time. That's part of what makes his writings enjoyable. And so we want to do some of that, and that's why I'm glad Ted was able to give kind of the personal vignettes to things.
Yeah, exactly. And I would just add to that, you know, I think you can count me among one of those people that was a little bit bogged down by Carson's book. I mean, we met Dr. Carson and really appreciated what he did, but, you know, I wanted to write something that, you know, my parents could read, or my friends back home could read, or my buddies from college could pick up and breeze through. And, you know, there didn't seem to be anything like that out there. And, you know, again, obviously coming from a sports background and a little bit more popular level background, I guess, I thought we could bring that to the table.
And I hope that, you know, the title, it's got its strengths and weaknesses, why we're not emergent. It's pretty clear what the book is about, but I think probably some people will have your reaction. Oh boy, two guys who are just going to do a hatchet job on the emergent church. And we really didn't want to do that, because we do know people in these churches or churches like these ones, and obviously we have some strong disagreements, but we wanted to be the sort of book that you wouldn't feel embarrassed to say, hey, why don't you read this? And I think there's some good critiques in here, and not feel like they had to apologize every other page for, you know, just...
Yeah, we really wanted to come off like another hatchet job. And actually, I read your review today, Daryl, and I really appreciate that. I feel like, you know, I sent it to Kevin afterwards, and I said, you know, it feels like this guy really got it. You know, I think you capture the spirit of the thing, to quote Slapshot. But I thought, yeah, you seem to pick up on that.
Yeah, I think the playful and provocative part, I think you really got. I appreciate it as well. You were respectful of the differences between, you know, a McLaren and a Scott McKnight as mm-hmm. well. So that was good. You mentioned in the book, I think, that I guess you weren't expecting necessarily to change a lot of minds among the people in the emerging church. You realize that people are maybe dug in. And given that, who are you writing the book for? And what do you expect to come out of the book?
You know, for me, I think I had several college students in mind when I wrote it. You know, we've been lucky that being a university church, we're lucky to be able to be in relationships with college students all the time. And, you know, I had some friends in mind when I wrote the book, some people who had just kind of gotten their heads turned by the whole idea that, hey, we can have a religion based on doubt and questioning and really not really put our hats anywhere at the end of the day when it comes to theology and being able to articulate what it is that we believe. And, you know, for me, I don't know what Kevin's answer would be for this, but for me, I really had those kids in mind when I wrote the book. And, you know, I wanted it to be something that was as winsome and engaging as a Blue Like Jazz, and, you know, something hopefully as theologically meaningful as what D.A. Carson would write. So hopefully between the two of us, we managed to meet some of those objectives. But
yeah, we don't expect that Brian McLaren's going to read through this and come out with a book, Why Everything Must Change Back, or something like that. But I think, you know, we wrote it for, I mean, the people that are going to agree. I mean, we know there's going to be people that agree. Hopefully they do it in a similar kind of spirit, not just want to say, finally, here's somebody to trash these guys. So those people will hopefully read it. I also wrote it a lot with people who just don't know. I mean, people like, yeah, my parents or their friends or people that are, you know, living in rural Iowa and have heard of the Emergent Church and don't know anything about it, and their kids love Rob Bell's Pneumas and they're not quite sure what to think about it. I've had run into a lot of people who ask questions. And so you're writing this book. What do you think of Rob Bell or Brian McLaren or these guys? And hopefully this is a book for people who have questions. Can, I mean, obviously it's one side of it, but will help answer some of those questions. And then I think there's a lot of people, some pastors and certainly people in churches that are, you could say, going emergent, that are really good-hearted evangelicals who want to see people come to know the Lord, are maybe been hurt in churches. Maybe they're frustrated by a real rigid kind of fundamentalism. And so they're reacting to some things that you need to react to, and they're wanting some good things, but maybe just haven't read carefully what some of these guys are saying. They maybe haven't connected the dots to say, oh, wait a minute, if the gospel is what we do in the world, then that's not a lot of good news for me because I don't do a lot of good things. And then don't see some of those connections, what they're losing by going to something that feels cutting edge and fresh and just kind of a new spin, but it goes much deeper than that.
I think there's a lot of people flirting with the emerging church that have a sound theology, and I think they go into it and assume, maybe from a background of solid Bible teaching, a lot of things that aren't said. And I'm pretty sure this came out when talking about Mars Hill. Maybe a lot of people that go there might have a solid biblical background, and yet a lot of stuff's assumed and not overtly said.
Yeah.
Do you think that's accurate? And if looking forward to people that might not have that background going into the same churches, what do you see coming out of that?
Yeah, no, I think that's dead on, Daryl. I think, you know, we mentioned this in the book. Rob Bell grew up in the town that we're in now, and I grew up in the town that Rob Bell is in now. So I know really well what that town is like. And when Ted and I visited a few months ago, you know, I saw people from my parents' home church and professors and all sorts of people that I knew there. And I know they're probably not even reading Velvet Elvis. They're not getting what he's saying or not saying. And sometimes I don't even know if Rob Bell is getting what he's saying or not saying. I think there is a lot of assumed kind of theology, especially in a place like West Michigan, which has a ton of churches, is for the most part very conservative. And I think you can come to a church like that and you get 10,000 Dutch people. I'm a Dutch person, nothing against them, but you get 10,000 Dutch people who have basically been in church for a long time and have a lot of good background. And then they hear something that hey, this is cool. This is fresh. This is new. Mm-hmm. But it's what happens in the second generation. What are their kids getting, or what are they not getting? And, I find that the same stuff that works in Grand Rapids and seems kind of fresh seems kind of stale, here in a university town. Oh, uncertainty. I get that in all my classes. The text doesn't have a meaning. Well, that's old news. I want something a little more solid. So I wonder if there's going to be a backlash, or if some of these places where they're sort of living off the fumes from an earlier generation are going to sputter out eventually.
What response have you got, even as people have heard that you're writing this book or that it's coming out soon?
I think it's been mostly positive. Moody, I don't know how much we want to get into this, Kevin, but Moody, was very intentional about wanting to send all the pages, basically where we mention anyone in the book, to those people. So Moody gave folks a chance to respond, well before the book came out. And, we haven't heard much of anything back from the emergent folks. But I think from other people, the response has been mostly positive. I was, quite frankly, terrified of doing this book. I hate conflict. I don't like stepping on toes. I'm the last person who would probably respond to a blog post or post anything on a message board or, get into some of those, theological wars that happen out there on the internet. So, I've been really kind of wringing my hands over what the response would be. But I think for the most part, it's been positive, and, people have appreciated our heart in the whole thing, which hopefully was clear. To write something that would affirm and build up the church and, do it in a fun and kind of winsome way.
And I think what I've heard more than anything else is people are really curious. They've heard something about the emergent church, or they know somebody who goes to one of these churches and they don't quite know what to think. So they're really eager to sort of hear the other side, because
right. You
got Carson, you got MacArthur, but if it's not one of those two, and MacArthur's really is really an extended book on Jude with some shots thrown in here and there with some other things. So to have something like this that can hopefully give a broad perspective and a critique, I think people are looking forward to. But I'm sure there's going to be criticism, and we've heard some of that. Why are you picking on people? Why do you have to start a fight? Can't you do something more positive? But hopefully people will take it for what it's worth, and it'll be helpful part of the conversation, to use the emergent cliche.
Yeah. And I think you guys indicated in the book, you could see it one day sitting down in a pub or somewhere with some of these guys if your paths ever do cross. That actually could happen, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it totally could happen, and I hope it's not terribly awkward when it does. But like I said, I genuinely, in my travels for the book and crossing paths with a couple of these guys, they seem genuinely likable and, like guys that I would enjoy spending time with. So, hopefully writing this book doesn't preclude that in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been contacted by a couple of the emergent guys we talk about in the book, and I certainly don't want to pretend like they were giving any kind of blanket endorsement to the book. They were nice and said, hey, I'm glad this is coming out, and you probably have some good points that other people in the movement need to hear. And we're trying to say these are some of the more moderate voices, and I'm sure they'll disagree with some things, but hopefully, we're not going to pretend that we all just really do agree on all of these matters, but hopefully you can get past some of the smoke and see where there actually is a fire and what things people really do disagree on.
Let me ask you a couple of questions about the emerging church. Trevin Wax and I think another guy have recently argued that the emerging church is receding. Do you see that it's basically a bit of a fad that might already have peaked and is now beginning to decline? Or do you see that it's still going pretty strong?
That's a really good question. I think it probably has peaked in its more faddish elements. The three C's. I mean, the shelf life for these kind of new worship trends is so short. I mean, the seeker sensitive stuff that lasted 20 years, and the emergent stuff is going to last half that long probably, and some of it might be good. So I'm not entirely critical of either one. But I think as just kind of the external stuff that goes into a church service, I think that's probably going to prove to be somewhat faddish. But some of the deeper movements, I think the real key is whether or not it gets hooked up with the mainline. I think at least in the United States, I see that like in our denomination at our annual synod meetings for 3 consecutive years we had, and this is a Reformed denomination, we had Leonard Sweet, Tony Campolo, and Brian McLaren as our keynote speakers. I don't think any of those guys are particularly Reformed, but somebody who makes those decisions felt like they were key people. We're a mainline denomination. I think if the emergence sort of hooks up with some of the mainlines that are struggling, because I think they're realizing at least the more liberal emergents have a lot in common with some of the more liberal mainline types. They really need to have, as much as they're anti-institution, the emergent church is going to last, and I don't really hope it does, but if it does, they're going to need to find a way to have institutions of their own and schools and seminaries and organizations. I think that will be the key, whether or not it lasts. But I certainly think some of the social justice elements, some of the reconfiguring what the atonement means, I think some of those are going to prove to be more than just passing fads.
I guess all I would add to that is that, you know, again, what we've seen, some of the more successful emergent guys like Rob Bell, I mean, they're affluent young white guys who know how to market. I mean, we've all grown up with marketing just 24/7, you know, and it's almost, you know, it'd be counterintuitive not to know how to market for some of these guys. And, you know, I even kind of put myself in that category. I mean, just growing up with MTV and ESPN and, you know, seeing how things are packaged and sold. You know, I think Rob Bell will probably have a successful church in 10 years. And, you know, whereas some of his emergent contemporaries might, you know, fall by the wayside a little bit. It does look to me like a fad. I don't think we'll be talking about it much in 10 years. I hope not. I think, like Kevin said, the comparisons with the more liberal mainline denomination, certainly there's a lot of similarity there.
So I think what part of the controversy will be more lasting are the theological disputes. I mean, just in evangelicalism, which has been very atheological over the past generation, is now trying to find out, does it really have a theology? And one of the emergent guys who called me up and I talked to him, he said, you know, what your book is really about is not the emergent church so much as creeping liberalism in the evangelical church. Mm-hmm. And I don't totally disagree with him. That is some of what, at least in my chapters, I was getting at. And so once you put a label on it, it's probably going to end up being a fad, and especially when emergent stands for everything that is anti-institution and everything that's supposed to be not faddish and not organizational. I think as a term, it's probably like postmodernism. People just sort of, it's a blip word now. That may not be too far down the road for the term emergent, but I think some of the theological issues that they're pushing are going to be things that the evangelical church has to sort out.
Tim Keller's made the point that the John Stott sort of evangelicalism that was not on the right politically, solidly orthodox, but also concerned about social justice, that as that's been on the decline, it's caused a lot of emerging people to look at evangelicalism to say something's missing here. So what do you think is legitimate about their concern? And what can traditional churches learn from the emerging church?
You want to field that, Ted, or you want me to?
I think I gave you about 3 questions here.
Hold on. No, that's fine. I'll go first, I guess. I think, you know, the couple things that pop into my mind, and, you know, I think I even wrote about this in the book, but, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago before Kevin came to URC, you know, we had our, you know, my wife and I, we had our kind of church's irrelevant phase. And, you know, I think we would have been ripe for the picking, I guess, for the emergent church. And some of our critiques were, you know, that evangelicals didn't seem to care about the poor. They didn't seem to care about social justice. And I think that's probably what made the emergent church attractive at the time was, hey, it looked like here are some folks like us who seem to care about this stuff, you know, who seem to be concerned about it. However, when, you know, I think we really jumped in to our church and started looking at other churches, we realized, hey, these emergent guys didn't invent care for the poor. You know, there are a lot of people in our own walls who are really, you know, about this and who are working hard in this area. So that's one thing. I think the other thing was, you know, the emergent church seems to place a pretty high regard on authenticity, whatever that means. I guess, you know, for some people it might mean swearing and admitting you listen to secular music, but, you know, I think it obviously runs deeper than that. But I think that was attractive too, not feeling like you had to put on some kind of an evangelical show at church or to be a part of church culture. And, you know, I think those are two really good critiques. And Kevin mentioned the culture in Grand Rapids, you know, this kind of conservative church culture that he grew up in and I'm certainly aware of. You know, I'm not surprised that a more emergent ideal bubbled out of that. And, you know, I think some of the critiques and some of the things that they brought up are good.
Yeah, and I would just echo that and say the social justice is a good example. That's one of those buzzwords that I don't always know what people mean by it. Hopefully everyone's for justice, whether it's social or informal or whatever. But the emergent church is probably right to see, at least in certain parts of evangelicalism, it being very over-politicized, at least in the United States. I think that's actually one of the dangers of the emergent church, as much as they would say, we're not the left, we're just trying to look at what Jesus would do. You read through their concerns and abortion, gay marriage, that gets really poo-pooed. The real issues are global warming and third world debt and AIDS. And if we could have a little more balanced approach on both sides and just not be overawed with politics, considering Jesus did very little that we see that was about politics. I mean, other than the massive thing of saying he was the Lord and no one else was. So I think that's a fair critique that many evangelicals just automatically got lumped in with the religious right, which did some good things and probably bound for a correction. And then, you know, critiquing the reductionistic methods of salvation here, just sign this card, raise your hand, and you're in heaven, and that's about it, and let's go save some more souls. Now, that's a caricature, but that's what they're reacting against. And so to get churches to think, okay, we need people to go to heaven, but what are they going to do for the next 50 years that they're here on earth? That's fair. I just wish that they would talk more about how do you help a 45-year-old mom who's dying of breast cancer besides telling her to go paint the world red for Jesus. I mean, what do you right. tell her in her final breath? So there are helpful critiques. That's what I tried to get at in the very last chapter, which talks about the seven churches of Revelation. And you look at each of those churches could be a different church in our community or could be a different group in our own church. And you got the Ephesus church that's got good doctrine, and Jesus, he doesn't criticize them for it. He just says, you're not loving. And I feel like the emergent church wants to throw out the baby with the bathwater and say, doctrine's your problem. No, doctrine isn't the problem. They weren't tolerant of sin. Jesus commended them for that, but they didn't love. They turned on each other, and that's a problem. And where there are churches like that, the emergent church is right to point out those problems. I just want them to see that they have their own weaknesses, too.
Well, what can emerging churches learn from uncool churches and pastors?
The first thing that I'm an uncool pastor. The first thing that I wish they would do, and it's something that I'm learning too, is just to be a little slower to make sweeping generalizations. I mean, it's so easy to say none of our churches care about the poor, mm-hmm. but you look at a church, you say, well, almost. I mean, every church I've been a part of, and they're not doing Bono stuff around the world. But you look at any church I've been a part of, not because of me, but you know, you're going to have deacons that are, you know, without people knowing it, are giving checks to people in the church who are out of work. There's people who are doing the proverbial serving in soup kitchens, going on mission trips. There's people doing evangelism. I mean, we need to improve in a lot of areas in our church, but I think they can be so dismissive of the quote unquote traditional church. Like there's just nothing but Lane carpet and Lane coffee going on there. When really you get to it, it's people living their lives who have normal jobs, fixing shoes, and then tithe their income and lead a Bible study in their home and pray for their kids and raise them well. And I mean, those people are my heroes, and mm-hmm. and they're not ever going to be on the cover of Newsweek, and they're not going to be talking about saving the whole sub-Saharan continent of Africa, but they're making a difference. And if the emergent church, I feel like they don't see those kind of people. They would probably say they do, but I feel like that those people get overlooked. And that's like Ted said, we want this book to be really affirming of all sorts of ordinary churches that are never going to be famous or well-known and have 100 people or 300 or 500, and the word is preached, and they're serving and they're loving, and there's more they need to do, but they're doing a lot of things that I think Jesus would be pleased with.
Yeah, I think what I would add to that is just that I think there's a lot more diversity in uncool churches than, you know, people think. You know, a lot of the emergent experiences that, you know, we had as research with this book, it seemed like a lot of, you know, 25 to 35 year old college educated kind of hipster white guys in a room with lattes discussing films. And that's a pretty narrow demographic at the end of the day. But again, visiting these uncool churches, thinking about the churches we grew up in, there are PhDs worshiping next to, you know, hourly workers and everything in between. And, you know, you just see this kind of really cool diversity and, you know, people learning from each other, people living their lives together in community, which is another cliche or buzzword, but I've really experienced that in the church I'm in now. And it's one of the things I appreciate most about our church. And it's kind of an underrated diversity, I guess you could say.
And I think the emergent church, a number of them probably felt like they didn't fit in the traditional evangelical subculture. They were maybe into art or films, or didn't want to wear khakis and polos and wanted to go to dance clubs, and just felt like they were part of a very different culture. And so the helpful thing is that they can show the church, you know, what you have a culture here and you don't realize it. And it's maybe not very easy for people like us to feel welcomed here because you're putting your khakis before the gospel without realizing it. That's a needed critique, but I think the emergent church doesn't see that they have their own culture that is even more narrowly defined often, and just going right down what kind of music they're going to listen to, the sort of political things that are issues for them. I think you have a lot of the same sort of demographic, and if there's not some Catholicity to it, that this could work for the church universal, then it's going to end up just being a little niche movement, which I think they want something more than that.
Good stuff. Churches are in decline, and at least it's perceived that the evangelical church is in trouble. People are looking for answers, and I think a lot of people thought, okay, maybe the emerging church is the answer. So if it isn't, what is?
And I would say, and I know what you're asking, Daryl, and I think you're asking it in a intentionally provocative way, but I would say that's the wrong question to ask, or at least you can ask it in the wrong way. If it's not the emergent church, what's it going to be? What's the new thing? And I don't think it is a new thing. I went to Gordon Conwell and had David Wells. I don't know if you had Dr. Wells for any classes, Daryl.
No, I never did.
Okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed his books and really enjoyed his classes. And the knock on him at the seminary is he's just sort of a pessimist and writes all these Jeremiads and what's wrong with evangelicalism. And somebody asked him in class one time, what do we do? I mean, how do we fix this? And he paused in his slow British talk and just said, I don't have a 12-point plan for you to fix the church. And then he thought a moment and he said, the only thing I can tell you is expositional preaching. Where'd this come from? But now I say that as a preacher and someone who believes in expositional preaching and knows that you need to have more than just strong preaching in church. But I think the word of God doesn't return void. That's what Isaiah says. And Jesus has all sorts of parables about what the smallest seed can do and how overnight it grows into the biggest plant in the garden. And I think if we would stop chasing after relevance, we would be so incredibly relevant to our culture. If we would be willing to be, you know, who we're called to be and be different, not in the way that we all have to dress differently and listen to different music, but we'd have a different kind of ethic and ethos and culture. And I think that's a relevance that really matters. I mean, I love this one part in Dan Kimball's book. There's some things in that book I didn't agree with. I thought he was advocating for a bunch of changes that wasn't necessary, but he has this one remarkable paragraph that I quote in the book where he says something like, you know, he's talking about his experience and what sort of drew him to the church or back to the church. And it was some 80-year-old pastor who was totally uncool, but invited him over and talked to him and asked him questions and loved him. And he says at the bottom, people are still the same and have the same needs. And I agree 100% with that. I think, you know, I see that with college students here in our community. Sometimes people get intimidated. They're not going to know the last podcast or the cool stuff on TV, but people want to know that you care and that you love them and you really believe the Bible and you teach it. And it's the hardest and easiest thing in the world to do. And it's simple, and it takes a whole lifetime of dying to ourselves to do it.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think Kevin said it better than I could, certainly. But, you know, again, I know from a parishioner's perspective, from the perspective of the guy in the pew, the Bible teaching that we've gotten has just been so meaningful, and much more meaningful than, you know, any other kind of trendy demographic thing that you might look for in a church. And that we've grown so much out of that. And I just think, you know, pastors who are willing to do that and stake their ministries on that can't go wrong. But it might not be the 5,000 seat churches either, though. You know, those be the smaller, less cool, more faithful type churches.
I love the part of the book where you said, "I'm convinced there are many of us in our postmodern world who are tired of endless uncertainties and doctrinal repaintings. We long for Jesus." And it goes on and says, "The Jesus of two millennia of Christian witness with all of its unchanging and edgy doctrinal propositions." So I thought that was a brilliant quote there.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't look at too many blogs, although I'll have to start looking at the Dash blog now. But I saw on Justin Taylor's blog, he posted this. Maybe it's even Trevin who sent it to him, that clip from ER. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that, yeah.
I mean, that was really powerful. You should see it, Ted. It's this guy who's dying of cancer, and he has this kind of quasi-liberal chaplain there, and she just keeps doing reflective listening to him, and I hear you're frustrated, and he finally just yells, "I want a real chaplain who believes in a real God and a real hell. I need to know how I need to know how I get forgiven." And I didn't watch the episode, so maybe he turns out to be the goat in the whole story. I don't know, but I think that's true. I mean, people want to know. Would you tell me? I mean, with humility, not an arrogant kind of certainty. Nobody wants to be arrogant, but would you tell me what's true? I need to know. Is there anything that I can base my life on? What's going to happen when I die and I look back and see I didn't help enough starving kids in Africa, and I didn't move into the inner city, and is my life worth anything? Is God going to accept me? I mean, those are still the fundamental realities that people need to deal with.
Just two more questions. I really loved that your voices were unique in the book, and both of you came from different perspectives, and you talked about authenticity. There was an authenticity of your voice. Did you guys have any surprises as you came at the same subject from different angles and wrote the book?
I don't think so. You know, and Kevin, you can speak to this too, but I think we're pretty close. And, you know, I know from my perspective, listening to Kevin's sermons every Sunday morning, you know, I felt pretty solidly like I knew what his chapters would say to a certain extent before I even read them. However, reading them, I was pleasantly surprised still. You know, I mean, there were things that came out of his writing that were, you know, I guess different or more, you know, maybe even more interesting than things that he would be willing to say from the pulpit. But I don't think there were any surprises, except that I probably enjoyed his writing even more than I thought I would. And that probably sounds like the typical co-author's response in these interview situations.
Yeah, we got that one. We collaborated on that response.
Exactly. We ran that through a couple times before you called.
Yeah, we checked with our agents and everything.
That's right.
The handlers and the focus group. I mean, I would... I don't think I had any surprises in terms of what Ted said. My, you know, when I first came to the church and got to know Ted and Kristen a little bit, we always joke. I mean, they look cool. I don't look cool. My wife's cool, but you know, I didn't have him pegged as somebody that I would, you know, become really close friends with. I thought, well, he's probably into movies, which he was, and I heard he took a college student too. Metallica. I thought that was kind of Philistine of him. But that was just...
It was a great show, man.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
It was unbelievable. That's for another interview, maybe.
Yeah. Those are my own, you know, issues and sin. So I was just... It was fun and pleasantly surprised as Ted and I got to know each other more through this project and talking to him that we could be very different people and read different kinds of things and be in different kinds of worlds, and yet that good biblical teaching matters as much to Ted as it does to me, and he's got the same kind of theological radar. So that was really important for me. Not that everyone's going to agree with our book. Lots of people won't. But, okay, this isn't just me and the other pastors that are going to go to together for the gospel or whatever, you know, who are sort of in the same circle of things. But, you know, regular guys in the pew, who this stuff really matters.
Yeah.
One last question for you, Ted. Where can we get copies of that DVD Behind the Praise Band, Manna from Heaven?
Oh, man.
I want to see that on YouTube.
Probably my basement, but you know, let me see what I can do about getting that baby up on YouTube. I've got some tech savvy friends who could probably throw that baby up there and for your enjoyment, Daryl. So
yeah, you know, I think there might be some demand for that when people.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
Book. Yeah.
Well, you know, that was the whole that was kind of the side motivation for the book, was to get rid of those DVDs. So
your wife would be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. You're certainly doing your part there.
It's thanks, some of the man. Best acting this side of Saved by the Bell, I'd say.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. I hope I do. Well, you know, guys, yep. I really appreciate your book, and I hope it does well. And actually, I hope I can meet up with you one day. You guys aren't that far away. You never know.
Be great.
That'd be great. I really appreciate you taking the time to read it and ask us thoughtful questions. And
definitely. Cool.
All the best to you guys.
Hey, thanks
very much, Daryl.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Hope to meet you sometime.
Likewise.
Okay.
Bye. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you want more information on the book, you can go to their website, notemergent.com. You can also check out my review at dashhouse.com. Take care. Until next time.